Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is mezzo-soprano Dawn Pierce. Pierce's talents have been showcased in many venues and styles, from solo performances in cities across New York State to an opera repertoire that includes the roles of Suzuki in Madama Butterfly, Lucretia in Britten's Rape of Lucretia, Joe in Little Women, Anita in West Side Story, and of course, Carmen. Pierce is currently an assistant professor of voice at Ithaca College. In 2004, she won the Metropolitan Opera District Competition. And welcome to the show, Dawn.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, you describe in your biography that you believe you came into this world singing. To tell us about that.
Well, I think in some way everyone comes into this world singing, because really that's what a cry is. It's a, you know, really visceral, body-connected sound, which is what singing is. So I think that's true. And then it's always just been a part of my life. From the time I was a little girl, I sang with my grandmother in the choir or my mom in the car, and it's just always been a part of my life.
Yeah, it's said in your biography that your grandmother was a conductor at a church, and she'd bring you to church, and you miraculously learned all the lyrics to these songs.
Well, I don't know if it's miraculous, but I definitely had an ear for music and for song, and it was realized pretty early on. And I think I was about 2 years old when they discovered I knew all the words to every song. And so there's a really funny picture. I don't remember this, of course, but I've heard the stories, and there's a really funny picture of me. I'm in this little tiny choir robe with all of these adults, and I'm come about up to their knees. But my grandmother said they just decided, hey, she knows all the words, let her sing.
Well, they made you a little robe. That is the cutest image.
Yeah.
Now, tell us when you discovered opera and decided that this was going to be the direction.
You know, I actually came to opera fairly late. I grew up in a really small town in upstate New York, and I was never exposed to it until actually after college is when I really found it. I was teaching at a private school in Manhattan, and I decided while I was living in Manhattan, I was going to totally live it up and do everything in New York. And so I went to performances all the time. And one time I went to the Metropolitan Opera, and I'll never forget this moment. It was a Friday evening, and I was exhausted. It had been a long week, and I was in standing room. And I didn't leave because I had tickets and I should be there, but I really didn't want to be there because I was just so tired. And so I wasn't really paying attention. I wasn't looking at the stage. I wasn't reading the titles. And all of a sudden, I just was overwhelmed and started weeping. And I had no idea. I was like, what? It wasn't the drama on
stage.
Well,
what was the opera? Do you remember?
Yes, the opera was Pagliacci. And at the time, none of this meant anything to me.
Uh-huh.
But now I've researched it and I know all about it. But at the time, I didn't know. It was Pagliacci and it was Domingo. And he was singing Vesti la Giubba, which is one of the most moving pieces. For those of people that don't know, it's a clown. And he's basically talking about how he's just found out that his wife is unfaithful to him and how he has to go on now and perform and how he's going to turn his tears into laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And that it just moved me so much. And I thought, wow, I want to do that. I can touch someone without words. And it's just this totally different level of communication. And that was the moment. So for me, it was a very specific moment in time. And after that, I was just full head. I want to sing opera. I want to do this.
Wow, that's amazing to me. Now, a lot of people think of opera as just dramatic voices and voice training, but it's a lot more than that. Tell us about the steps you had to take to take on this profession.
Opera is a lot of work. There's a lot of training involved, definitely. We joke that we are more trained than doctors and lawyers in some level because we continue to study our whole lives. So you need to learn to sing in and also speak Italian, French, and German at the very least. Also, if you want to sing in Czech or Russian, those are or Spanish, there are other operas in those languages. But you really need to know every word you're saying so that you can communicate. So you have to learn the languages. You have to coach to learn the musicality and things like that. Of course, reading music, notes, and rhythms, and vocal technique is really important. In addition to all of the musical and artistic elements, you also are your own boss, and it's your own business. So you're sort of, you know, Dawn Pierce Incorporated. You have to be in charge of that. So there are a lot of elements to it, which is part of why I love it, because it really gives you a variety of things to focus on and do, and you're always learning and growing all of the time.
Yeah, it is a fascinating profession. Now, you also got very into learning different dances. Is that usual for opera singers? Because a lot of people think of opera singers as these big giant sopranos sort of standing. I mean, they do, the stereotype.
That stereotype is really changing, though.
It is.
In this day and age. Mm-hmm. I love to dance. It's just a passion of mine. I love it. So I would not say it's traditional, but I would say that you do have to dance, and you definitely have to move. You definitely have to know your body and be able to portray a character through movement. And a lot of the characters that I do, like a Carmen, you definitely have to be able to move and feel that music in a way. We also sometimes do waltz in opera or mm-hmm. polka, so there are some elements of dance in opera.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about that career in opera. Is everybody a freelancer? I mean, are you just going to auditions, or is the hope to become part of a great opera company? Does that happen?
Well, that's not really how it works in the United States. In the United States, you're contracted per opera, by opera. So it's not, in Europe, there are companies where you become a house singer and you stay with a company for a year or 2 years or however long they keep you, and you do all of their shows. But that's not how we do things in the U.S. usually. Most of the time you get hired by what roles you do. So you have a handful of, I would say, around 20 roles maybe in your repertoire that you do fairly regularly. And of course you'll add things sometimes, or there'll be a premiere. But overall it's by audition and by company. It's also work leads to work and reputation and things like that. I also at this point have management, so they go out and they find auditions for me and send me on auditions and things like that.
Wow, that's amazing to me. So if you're not really in a company, how do you rehearse for these? How do you get ready for a role? Say you want to do Carmen, but you never had. How would you get yourself ready for something on your own like that?
Yeah, there are a lot of steps to it. So, I mean, first you have to learn the music. So you learn the notes and the rhythms, and you memorize the text, and you research the character and the poetry, and you do all of that on your own. It's all individual preparation. There's a lot of that on your time on your own.
I don't think people would know that. And then so you're sitting there being dramatic in front of a mirror to yourself?
Well, maybe eventually, yes, but that comes later. I mean, really, you have, there's so much work to be done before you even sing a note. I mean, you have to translate the entire score if you don't know every word. You know, you have to make sure you know it all. And, you know, again, just the basics of the musicianship. Then usually you'll take it to voice teachers. So you take it to a teacher and you study technically and you work on it. And then you also work on it again with coaches. So you have a vocal coach that works on the language and style and musicality. So you do all of that on your own. And then you walk into rehearsal the first day with a company. And usually the rehearsal periods are between 5 days and maybe 3 weeks, just depending on the company and the budget and the show. And then when you go into rehearsals, that's where you start to actually build with other characters. So you come in sort of, here's my part, and then they start putting it all together. You are staged by a director. You work with a conductor on his tempos and on how he wants things phrased and things like that. So it's very collaborative after the initial phase.
Huh. Is there such thing as overacting in opera?
Sure. Opera is definitely larger than life.
It is.
And it has to be. It has to be, because if you think about it, the thing that makes it unique from any other stage singing is that there are no microphones. So there's nothing to amplify the voice at all other than the natural acoustic of the instrument in the hall. And so you have to make things large. And in this country, the opera halls are giant. They're so big. And so if you want to make a gesture, no one's going to see it if it's subtle. There, no one's going to see a little look on your face. So you have to make it a little bit bigger so that it reads in the audience. And you judge that often by what hall you're in. If you're in a smaller space, you will tone your things down to meet that space.
Now, you've said that your favorite roles are strong and heroic women, but a lot of women in opera are obviously victims or victimized. Tell us what some of your favorite roles are.
Well, you mentioned Carmen. I definitely love Carmen. She is very strong, and she's very centered in herself, and I love the music, and she's a little naughty, and I really like that. I think it's fun to you can do things on stage that you would never do in real life. The first time I did Carmen, the Habanera was staged with me throwing water at people. I was giving myself a sponge bath on stage.
And for those of you just listening, she's doing these dramatic moves right as we speak.
Yeah, so it was really fun because you couldn't get away with that in real life. I also love Lucretia and Rape of Lucretia, who is a victim, definitely. She's a victim, but she's also strong. You know, she makes decisions that are very, very selfless and very grand scale. You know, it's definitely a typical opera in that she dies. I mean, she kills herself in the end, but it's for really strong purposes. It's not because she's a wimp, you know. So I really love roles like that. And in general, in opera, there are a lot of women that, even though they're victims, become very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's where it is a little bit like real life. A lot of spirited women are victims.
Absolutely.
And the spirit sometimes cannot be killed, thankfully. Now, I want to play an excerpt from one of your pieces. This is called Arianna. And it's a Haydn piece. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Talk about a strong woman. Great example. She was a Greek heroine, so for those of you that know that story. And this excerpt is, actually, this is a performance that I did last year at Ithaca College with Haris Demeris, a pianist. And it's a wonderful cantata. It's about a 25-minute cantata of his that I think is incredible. It's very operatic, and it tells a story. It has two recitative sections and two aria sections. The part that we're going to hear today is the second recitative section. And in this section, you're hearing her emotional journey. She has discovered that Teseo has left her. And she says, hear me, I'm going to go crazy. And she just goes through this. This is a moment where she literally loses it. And she's angry and she's emotional and she's upset. And through this section, she gets to a place where she yells at him and she says, you're faithless, you're a deceiver. And by the end of it, she calms down a little bit and she says, no one's hearing me. Who's listening? No one's listening. No one's having compassion for this.
Let's listen. I love the extreme drama of opera. I really do. Well, why do you think opera still resonates with people?
Because it's so real. And I think even now, with all of the reality television and things that are out there, people are craving real life. They're craving real emotion and connection. Because of all of the separation we have now with media, at that aspect, I think it gives you sort of a real visceral connection to people and to emotion and just life.
Yeah. Do you think we've lost some of the human factor by making ticket prices so high, and it's almost like you have to dress up, and it's kept, you know, some of the people away as the way it used to be? It was more for the people. That and classical music, it seems.
Yeah, I think there is a small element of that, but I also think that's changing. Mm. I think that even in the past, since I've been singing, maybe the past 10 years, I've seen that change. I've noticed they're making efforts to do things. For example, I was just in Nashville singing with Nashville Opera, and it was their 30th season, and so they decided, we're going to sell $30 tickets, and anybody can come. And they also are very down to earth. You don't have to dress up to come to the opera. I think people like to dress up to come to the opera. I think that's part of it. I think it's less about having to be a certain way, and that there's something about that people enjoy. So, you know, so there are a lot of people out there that want to get dressed up. You know, you don't have an excuse to do that very often anymore.
That's,
so
that's true.
I think people
that's
like
true.
It.
If you're just joining us, my guest is mezzo-soprano Dawn Pierce. Now, I want to ask you, how do you deal with reviews, good and bad reviews? Do they affect you? Do you read them? Do you take them to heart when they're good and dismiss them when they're not?
Well, I'll say that I've been fairly lucky so far, and I haven't had anything really horrible. I do read them, but I definitely think it's one person's opinion, and it feels nice when they say something good, but you can't base your value on that. In singing in general, it's very personal, because sometimes you think, oh, I can't blame it on the instrument or on some other element because it's me. I am my instrument. I am the only person in that moment. So sometimes it's taken very personal. I find that in my teaching. It's something I have to teach my students that, you know, your singing is a very big part of you, but it does not define you. And so when it comes to reviews and things like that, I think they're important because I think they give the public something to hold on to and to listen to. But it's one person's opinion, so you know, you have to take that into consideration mm-hmm. when you look at them.
I find opera reviews elaborate, and I actually usually learn something from them. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I suppose they are important also to the audience.
I think that's true, definitely. And they usually, I would say nowadays, the reviews that are out there are really trying to help the public see what you're going to see. Mm-hmm. So I haven't run into too many places in opera where they're really just trying to bash someone. They're really trying mm-hmm. to give people something to listen for when they actually go to the opera. That's why they review opening night, because even though it makes no sense, let's review the day when they're just getting everything on their feet for the first time. You know, but that's why they do it that way, so that they can say, here, this is what to expect when you go. Please go listen. And if it's something great, then people want to go and see that.
Have you ever done an opera in Europe?
I have not done a full opera in Europe. Mm. At this point, I have done concerts in Europe and some excerpts and things like that with orchestra, but I have not done a full opera there yet.
Because I was wondering if there was any problem with the language. You know, an Italian might notice that an American singing in Italian was not totally perfect, or you know what I mean?
You have to work on that. You have to work really hard on that. Even here in the States, I mean, your audience is going to consist of people who are native to the language, and that's part of why you study it and you learn it. And I have gone to Italy, France, and Germany to study the languages and to hear native speakers speak. When I coach the languages, I try to work with native speakers. Singing in a language is a little different than speaking, though. There are things that you have to do differently in order to let the voice resonate and speak in a certain way. So there will always be parts that are slightly different. Mm-hmm. It's no different than here, though, when someone comes from Italy and they sing an opera in English. You know,
exactly.
They may have a bit of an accent, but they work really hard to make it so that it sounds the most native as possible.
Yeah, and Pavarotti singing with the tenors, that was hilarious to try to hear him trying to speak English. I loved it. Now, let's play another excerpt. This is from Verborgenheit.
That's correct.
Verborgenheit.
Good job.
Tell us about it.
It's a piece by Hugo Wolf. It's an art song, and it was written in 1888. And this is with Blake Riley, the pianist is Blake Riley, a collaborative effort that I did down in Florida, actually. This piece is really about introspection. I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces. The irony is that Wolf didn't like it. He thought it was junk and
really?
Didn't even want to take credit for it. The joke is that it's because it has sort of a Brahms feel, and he didn't like Brahms very much. So that's probably why. But I think the poetry is beautiful, and the piece is very beautiful. You're going to hear a part of it that is talking about how you want your heart to have solitude and to live with your own bliss and your own pain. So it's sort of about, you know, secrecy and internal introspection.
Let's listen to it. It is beautiful. I'm just one of those people that just loves the sound of opera anyway. But I must say I'm much more attuned to the Italian operas. than the German operas?
Interesting. I sing mostly Italian and French. It's mm-hmm. just the sort of voice that I have. Mm-hmm. I personally love the French operas because those are the characters that I do a lot of, you know, Carmen, Dalila, Charlotte, this wonderful French music, and I love the French language. But of course, Italian is this core of what you expect to hear when you hear opera. Yeah. It's really beautiful.
Did you think 100 years from now anybody's writing operas in the 20th, 21st century that might stand up like some of the Italian and French and German operas? Have you seen anything contemporary?
Of course, yeah. I think there are some composers up and coming right now that are doing some interesting things. Jake Hagee has come up with some really interesting pieces. A piece that I performed recently was Little Women by Mark Adamo, and I think that's an incredible piece, and he uses a lot of traditional motifs as well as making up his own. So he sort of combines different things. It's very Wagnerian in that he defines each character with a certain tonality in a certain way. I was Jo in Little Women, mm-hmm. and her music, she's very torn inside and she's all over the place. And so her music is very atonal and it's all over the place. And she'll jump from being a 12-tone scale to whole tone music, and then all of a sudden she'll be in this pop, warm 1-4-1-5-1 tonality out of nowhere, you know, and it's just because that's her character.
Is this in English?
It is in English. Oh. And it's a really great adaptation of the novel. And I think because it's an American classic, the novel itself, mm-hmm. that the opera has that sort of draw, I would say, because people know the name of it, they know the story, and then they go, and the music is actually very beautiful and very relatable. So I think there are some pieces out there. It's really hard to tell.
It is.
When you're in the middle of it, what's going to catch. I mean, a perfect example is I just did this Andrea Chenier in Nashville, which is some of the most beautiful music I have ever heard. Now, have you heard of it? Most people have not.
Not yet.
It was written in the same year as La Boheme. It had its premiere in the same year,
oh, yeah.
and it was a much bigger hit than La Boheme at the time. But what do we know now? La Boheme.
Well, things get lost.
They do.
That are
so
still
really
out there to discover.
Hard to say.
Oh,
yeah, it's really hard to say.
I remember a few years ago I saw the Harvey Milk Opera in San Francisco. That was a premiere, and it was fascinating, but it's still so hard to see a contemporary story in English in those opera voices. It almost didn't work.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting to me, too. Now you teach voice at IC. Tell us how you inspire your students. What are you looking for? What are you trying to convey?
Well, I hope I inspire my students. They inspire me on a daily basis because they come in just open-eyed and ready to learn. And I love it. I love teaching. I love Ithaca and all that they bring to their students. On a daily basis, honestly, what I try to bring to my students is truth. I try to bring them the anatomy of singing, because singing is not only art, it is also science. The instrument works in a certain way, and I want them to understand the anatomy and physiology of their instrument, in addition to helping them become a better artist and really grow as an artist. So I try to install in them some basic technical skills while encouraging their artistry to grow. Most of my students are undergraduate students, and they are just beaming and so excited to learn. So it's really fun to work with them.
It said in your biography that you teach workshops and you deal with the subject of stage fright. How do you help people through that? That seems to be an across-the-board problem for people no matter what they're doing publicly.
That's a great question, and it is a tricky thing for each individual. You have to identify what is the thing that's getting in your way. What is the judge that's on your shoulder? How do you identify that person, you know, or that thing or that element? Usually there's something, there's a specific thing, and so that's what I try to do is I help people identify what are the symptoms of your stage fright and what ways are they affecting your performance. And that's, we start there, and once you identify what they are, you can sort of embrace them. An example is, I've really changed my mindset because the reality of fear, which basically is what stage fright is, mm-hmm. is extremely close to energy and excitement. They're so close. All you have to do is turn a switch, and all of a sudden, all of those anxiety and fear and stage fright, all of that, all of those feelings, you can just switch them over and make them into this place where it's just excitement and energy, which can serve you really well. An example is, I have a student that her leg shakes. When that's her symptom, her leg would shake. And so I said to her, when she would try to think, stop shaking, stop shaking, stop shaking, it would get worse and worse, and her performance would start to go away because she just was so focused on that. And so I said, what if when your leg is shaking, you said you started trying to shake it instead of trying to make it stop? Try to shake it. And she did, and immediately it stopped. because she gave herself permission to have that feeling, and then all of a sudden she could get past it and move on.
Have you learned to convey this to students because you learned how to do this in your own life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that most of my teaching comes from experiences that I've had and things that I've had to learn, definitely.
Uh-huh. Well, I think we have time. I want to play a piece from Messiah. Thou that tellest.
Yes, thou that tellest good tidings to Zion. The text is from Isaiah, verse 9, and this is obviously Handel's Messiah that we all know. And I don't know that this needs much introduction, as everybody knows the Messiah.
Let's listen to it. I love that music, and I love the Messiah. I mean, it's cheerful and it's exciting to me. It brings a wonderful mood to me. Now, before we do run out of time, I want to talk about the fact that when you're not pursuing opera, you are making jewelry. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's true. I started my own little business. It happened sort of by accident. The irony is I had been robbed and all my jewelry was stolen. And I needed things to wear for performances. And it's not cheap to find those things. And not easy to match this perfect gown you have. So I started making things for myself. And other singers said, oh, where'd you get that? And so eventually I started making things on commission and turned into home parties and then eventually into art shows and galleries and things. So I just, it's something
exciting.
I do for fun. It's sort of a hobby that also brings a little income now and then.
That's great. What kind of materials do you use?
Oh, I use a lot of different things. I actually like to mix materials. My artistic aesthetic is very Rodin, so it's sort of the refined with also feeling the natural involved. So I use a lot of things like freshwater pearls that I think are very beautiful because their shape is not perfect. Uh-huh. You know, it has a little different feel to it. And I'll use that combined with something very refined like a Swarovski crystal or something.
Wow, that's fascinating to me. Well, we are almost out of time. Tell us about any upcoming events that people might be able to see you.
Actually, with the Messiah that you said you liked, I have a couple of Messiahs coming up, but there's one locally, actually, and it's in Ithaca with the Cayuga Chamber Orchestra on December 19th, and also a Carmen coming up in Syracuse. I'm doing a concert of many of the Carmen arias, the favorites, with the Onondaga Civic Symphony Orchestra, and all of that can be found on my website, which is...
And please give your website. That was my next my next prompt.
Great. It's just dawnpierce.com, so it's very easy to find, and I have a calendar up there with upcoming events and recordings and pictures and all kinds of fun things.
Yes, it's a wonderful website. Well, Dawn Pierce, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.